Session number 16722, Captain George Ledger, Reel 11.
Captain Ledger, Reel 11. You'd reached Dunkirk, Captain Ledger. What was the scene? What was happening to you on those beaches?
Well, I must start before we reached Dunkirk, at the outskirts of Dunkirk, because that's where we were dropped off. We had been picked up with lorries and driven the last few miles towards Dunkirk to break through, to drive through the people who were guarding the perimeter. We had to come through those people. And we just couldn't walk through them, so they put us in lorries and dashed through them. And because we have been fighting that rearguard action, and these people have been keeping that perimeter open for us, you see. So when we got through these people guarding the perimeter, we got out of our lorries and we started walking through Dunkirk. And each side, it was just one horrific sight of machines, lorries, guns, armaments, you name it, it was there. Strewn both sides of the road you went to, there was hardly room for a lorry to get past, to walk up. In fact, it was that bad in places that it wasn't a case of marching up like a disciplined troop. You were just straggling up, walking up in different sections and getting past these heaps. And eventually, when we got past the main set of disarmaments, smashed old vehicle and things, and started near the pier, the Dunkirk pier, it became a little bit more clearer at that point, because the action hadn't reached that point then. The action was back just in the outskirts of Dunkirk, and the action hadn't reached the Dunkirk pier itself, and so we were able to reassemble and sort of march or walk, more or less, together up to the pier. Now, when we arrived at the pier, the pier seemed to be burning in various places. It was a wood pier. I don't know whether it was the main one or not, but it was the only one. I looked at the sea, we came to a wood pier, and there was no other piers to the right-hand side. There was the long beaches. Now, that wood pier was there. I don't know what happened to the left, what was at the left-hand side. I was only concerned about the wood pier. That's the one where our company started to walk up to get onto the ship. Now, we were held up there for quite a while. And in my case, I was by myself, well, not by myself, but I was just one of the platoon then. No sections, everybody was just intermingled. We were just a group waiting to get onto a ship, the best we could. Sections and company commanders, platoon commanders just weren't there. There were just a lot of us trying to get onto a ship. Whilst we were waiting to get on, I felt very, very thirsty, and I hadn't any water left in my bottle. And I could see there was a little queue on the right-hand side of me, off the pier. There was a little hut there, and there was a tap coming through the wall, and there was a little queue there. There were 15 people standing at the queue, and they were filling the bottles up off there. So I went across to the queue, and I got in. When I got to the queue, I didn't have my bottle, did I? I was had nothing when I got there. All I had was my rifle. And I got myself a drink from that tap. And when I turned around to come back here, there was just nobody there. And I wondered, and they had disappeared. They had come off the pier, apparently, and had gone somewhere else. And then I had gotten into the main stream of the people, the troops who were trying to get back. But anyway, it turned out later, afterwards, like, that they had gotten together on a ship, but the pier had been on fire. Anyway, when I found they weren't there, I just walked from this top and I walked onto the beach myself. It was that close. There was the wood pier, and I personally, myself, so I was by myself then. I walked onto the beach, and I walked halfway along the beach, and there was rows and rows of troops. There was about one, two, three large troops, large groups about 5 or 6 deep, right up the water's edge. And there was a pole standing down, and there was an officer standing on each one, which I found out later, there was an officer's stand. And from each pool, there were a string of lads in the water like this, stretched out.
Arms locked together.
Locked together like this, you know. And when I walked up this, to the second group, I walked past one group, and I walked up to the second one, and I walked towards the leader, the officer standing at this pool, there were hundreds of the lads there. There was a lorry came up, and it started disgorging small boats, collapsible boats. You put them together, you know, you just open them up and push your foot in them, and it held about six or seven men. And they were putting these together as I went in. So I just went to them and I started to give them a hand. I didn't go and join the queue. And after I got about 10 of those fitted, you know, and pushed out to the sea, I saw what was happening. The lads were just climbing into them and were pushing them off. So I decided it was time I got on one of them. So I got onto one of these and I pushed this off. And I went before my turn because there was 500 or 600 before me, actually. But nobody ever said anything. You know, you just got in, you're just one of them. And I pushed it off and they were guided up this, the number of people in the water, fastened arm by arm. They pushed, helped it on its way until it got right out. And when it got out so far, there was a motor-driven boat, like a motorboat, I would call it for the sake of another word, come around and getting a hold of you with a long crook and towing you away from the end of the chain and taking you out, to, in my case, it was to a trawler. Not a trawler, it was a transport ship. It was quite, not a medium size, wasn't very big, but it was a medium sized one, the transport ship. And they took us out there, and I had me, still had my rifle with us. And when we got us to the ship and the planes, they weren't coming down because it was night time, you know, because they wouldn't disembark. They wouldn't let you come off during the day because
so
there's that many.
You were taking off at night?
I was taking off at night. And it wasn't really dark, you know. It was still light, but it wasn't
dusk.
Dark. It was dusk. And the plane, you could hear a plane, but they weren't coming down strapping anything like that then when I got out in that boat. And we got us to this transport ship and we climbed out of it and there was scores of them up on board and they were handing down ladders and we got different types of ladders and we were pulling ourselves up the ladders. And the first thing they did to me when I got on there was to take my gun off us. And after carrying that gun all the way, they took it off us and everybody had to leave the gun in a heap on the deck. And then they sent us down below, out the road, and we just stayed there under such time as this boat took us to Southampton.
Did they give you anything to eat or drink?
As soon as we got down, there was hot tea sent, it never stopped. The whole time we were down, I'm talking about hundreds of us, you know. The tea never stopped. From the minute I got to the bottom of that, into the hold, you know, there was hundreds of us in there. By scores, I should say. And the weapons piled up on the boat, on the deck, the rifles.
Did you feel safe at that point, that you were down in the deck?
Well, it was just more or less a feeling of satisfaction there and sit and rest. Not a case of being safe, because, you know, the noise and such like, there was still this firing and such like going on, you know, with the guns, the big guns were still firing.
Were they, you mentioned the queues up to the edge of the sea. Were they organised? Was there any panic? Was there any shouting? Or was...
Do you know, Harry, when I went on that beach, you would think there'd never been a war. They were standing up there. There wasn't a noise. There wasn't an aeroplane. And this was afternoon, late afternoon, getting on to dusk, you know. And there was three different queues, large, I'm just guessing, 300 or 400 in each queue, and then the officer standing at the head of them and letting them go out, these number of men lying standing up in the water, passing them up, and then the boats coming and taking them out of the big boats. But the only time I saw any feeling of what you're talking about, people getting, what was the
disorder
word?
Disorder.
Disorder, no, I never, The only time I saw anything like that was when the airplanes started coming across, and then they used to scatter. Just used to scatter all over the beach and just down. Where the first little hole, you know, the sand dunes. And that was it. Then when they got past, they used to come again and just get into the queue.
Did you see any dead or wounded?
I never saw any bodies? I never saw any dead in a short time. I wasn't on the beach a long time. I never saw any dead or wounded when I was walking from that top, from the pier, along the middle of the beach. I didn't see any. But apparently there must have been some in the dunes, because, you know, or leaving where I hadn't looked, never saw any.
What date were you taken off?
It was the dusk of the night of June the 1st. It was, because it went up into the 2nd of June when I got into Southampton Church. I was taken to Southampton in the church hall, the main street. And I was kept there for a couple of days or so, and I was sent from there to Rudgeley Camp, where the DLI were reforming.
So you got on this small transport vessel and ultimately got to Southampton, as you say.
Southampton.
Was there a reception for you when you came off the ship?
The reception was marvellous. Everyone had somebody to get a hold of their hands. Doesn't matter who got off that ship, somebody got a hold of them. And mine, let's face it, Harry, we were in a mess. We weren't well dressed, you know, and smart, you know. We were really uncouth, you know, really churned up, you know. Well, we had nothing. Everything was taken, with arms and such like, was taken off us on the ship with the rifle guard, no bayonets and things. All that was just left on the ship. I was just standing in my battle dress. In fact, I didn't even have a helmet.
Did you feel you'd been defeated?
Oh, that was one feeling we did have when we got back. But it wasn't a permanent feeling, you know. It was just, well, we didn't do very well there, did we? That's the way we used to think, you know. Well, what the hell was happening? So we just didn't understand.
The reception that you got from people, civilian people or organisations when you landed, was that one of a defeated army coming in, or...?
It was one of defeated army coming in, because you didn't have much chance at each time to stay on Southampton docks before somebody whisked you off. There was hundreds of them there. I suppose WBS, Red Cross workers, all sorts of charity workers, they were running all over the place and grabbing you and helping you to get into these transport, and we're helping you along. In fact, they come to help you, and although you could still walk and do yourself, they were trying to, you'd think you were injured or something, you know, that was the impression I got, but they were trying, really trying, but I think it turned out that they were really trying to hurry the people off there into the lodge to get them set for the next ones to come in. I think that's what, there was such a rush on that Southampton docks. It was just wild, you know. Get them away.
There was no food or drinks for you when you landed?
Not when we... There was no food or drink given to us when I got off the boat. We put carried straight along in these lorries. And, well, in fact, it wasn't a lorry, it was a coach, a bus, which they put us into and filled us up. And it took us straight, this coach of mine, it took people other places. But where I got into was a coach, and went up the main street of Dorchester, and they stopped in the main street somewhere, and it was a church somewhere up that street, and went into the church, and here it was a big hole.
Dorchester.
They took us from there to Dorchester. From on the coast.
From Southampton to Dorchester.
And up the streets of Dorchester. Up the streets of Dorchester, we went into this church. All the seats had been removed from the church. It was just like a big church hall. And we lay on there, and the moment we all got in there, and we were fed and got as much as drink and as much to eat as, you know, as what, and we were really looked after there. And they kept us about a couple of days, I think, there. But we got ourselves cleaned up a little bit. And then they took all the particulars of which regiment we belonged to and such like, and then eventually I got word to say that I was being sent to Rudgeley. And when I got to Rudgeley Camp here, there was a lot of the DLI there. So they were getting us together.
And presumably people were coming in over a number of days?
Oh, yes. And this Rudgeley Camp was in a wood. There were just tents built and erected inside a wood at Rudgeley. And I remember going, when I was got fixed up, I was given a cardboard bag, and I had no hat, no cap. I just had my battle dress uniform I stood in, trousers, the blouse, nothing else but this bag they gave us from South at Ridgely. And that's how I got home. That was the way they sent me home. Now, they sent me home and gave me a pass for 48 hours. And when I returned home, I went to me. I lived at, well, just down here, Ballymow, York Road, I lived here. And I went there and expecting her 48 hours. I'd been there 24 hours, and as word came, I had a report immediately back to the regiment. So I only had 24 hours at home after Dunkirk. And I was sent and picked up and sent away down to the south of England, and that's where we started.
Why do you think they gave you such a short leave?
Well, I would imagine they were expecting the invasion taking place, you know. That's what I would imagine, because when we were coming off the beaches, we expected the Germans to follow us straight away. That was what was in our minds. And the whole time we were sitting on the... When we were travelling on the boat, this transport, that was a lot of the conversation amongst us when we were down in the hole, just talking. And I hope the bees, you know, this one who said it, another word like swear words, I hope the bees don't come tonight and follow us. And that was the main thought, we better get across their shop, I hope the bees don't come tonight. Let's get our dinner, sort of thing.
Did your family know you were coming on leave, or did you arrive unexpectedly?
No, I wrote, arrived unexpectedly. They didn't know I was coming on leave.
Well, what was the reception?
I remember being sent from Ridley, and I arrived at Newcastle station. And I was just carrying this little cardboard box. And I had a pass, you see, and then I had the bus. I had paid my own bus fare at the time, and I come from Newcastle and I got off at Birtley. I was walking through Birtley. Well, before I got off the bus, I had to stand on the bus from Newcastle to Birtley. Nobody would give us a seat, you know. I was just one of those, just another soldier coming. The bus was full, and you were just another swaddy, you know. Because naturally, people in England had been bearing the brunt of the war, you know. And I stood all the way back and got off of Birtley, and I was walking from Birtley to come back here, and there was a woman on the other side of the road, and she waved like this. She says, "Hello, George. We thought you were dead." So that was the first greeting which I got. And it was a woman who used to live down here, and she used to live next door to my mother. And they had given us up because I didn't arrive back with my battalion, you see. My battalion, Air Company, DLR, had got back on a ship. I don't know how it was sold eventually, but they came all together, came back on a ship, apparently. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but they came up that pier. Whereas I came off the... And that's the reason, just going to the city, going for a drink of water. And I cannot... Imagine.
You came, obviously, to your house, and what was the reaction of your
When I got to my own house, I got to the gate, it's right in the main road, my house, and there's a garden. You could see the window, you could see the footpath. Well, 50 feet long, the garden is at the front there. And they could see me through the window, saw me come through the window, walking across from the handy cables there, across to the gate. And they were out of the door. My mother and father, and there were just a lot of tears. My father was in the forces and all, you know. He was in his uniform, because my father was in the Home Defence Volunteers, and he was stationed in Washington. He was a sergeant and all, at his age. But he had been gassed in the First World War, my father.
And you really didn't get much time. I mean, you were only there 24 hours.
24 hours. I was home, and I was... Just settling in, I got a good bath and got myself cleaned up a bit. And this word came, it was Cable, it came and said, report to such and such, that report to the drill hole, back in Berkeley, you know, where I originated from, but there was different people in there then, but I report there, get fresh instructions, and that was where I was. That report down, I think it was Yeovil I reported to.
Must have been dreadfully disappointing for your parents to have you then be to go
with 24 hours, that's all I had, and that was all the leave I had until they were preparing to go to Egypt.
Did you make your own way after you'd reported across to Berkeley? Did you make your own way down to Yeovil, or was there a group of you going?
No, there was a group of us went. I reported the drill hole, and we went again from the drill hole to. Because there were different people in there, but we had to report there and go. To, I think it was Yeovil we went to.
And then what date would this be?
It would be about third or fourth of June. 3rd or 4th of June when we went down there. Mind, it's such a long time since, Harry, I just can't remember about the 3rd or 4th of June it would be. Or it could be later because I was 2 days in... I was 2 days in Dorchester, in the church. And I was a couple of days in Ridgely Camp. That's 4 days. That's from could have been the 5th or 6th of June. As close as that.
You would join the battalion down in Dorchester.
That's when I went. And when I got down to the battalion, they were all busy teaching Home Guard. That's what they were doing. They were all detailed different the NCOs, you know.
Were you still a corporal at this point?
I was a corporal at that time.
And did you go straight into training the whole guard when you got there?
I went straight, yes.
What kind of things were you trying to teach them?
Just this arms drill, and I had hose, garden forks and things like that. I hadn't any rifles. And, you know, it was laughable, you know. But that's what we were doing. When we got reformed again, then we had to start and really train ourselves. It was mainly the sergeants and who were going out in these groups of Home Guard. Might have been about 15, 20 of them in groups, and they would give them a bit, teach them an army discipline, just like in Matthias, and teach them about home defence. That's what they were mainly teaching them.
Whereabouts on the beaches were you stationed?
When we were at home.
Yes, on Dorset, in Dorset.
Well, we were taken, my first place was down at Bridport, and we stayed at a village called Eatmouth, at Bridport, on the beach itself. And we were sleeping in a little small wood bungalows right around the beach. It was like a holiday park. And it was one big field and small private wood huts. Right way around, people used them for the weekly or annual visits. We accommodated all those, and all our company slept there in those boat huts.
Were you still back with A Company?
I was still with A Company, yes.
And the same section?
Same section, same 8th section. I stayed with them the whole time.
Had you lost any officers out of the company in the platoons?
At that time, no, we hadn't lost any, not to my knowledge. There was one officer, not in my platoon, but there was one officer who had been taken prisoner. I couldn't remember his name offhand.
So you still had the same platoon officer that you'd had?
I still had the same platoon. It was a Lieutenant Preacher.
What were you doing on the beaches?
Down in Eatmouth.
Other than the Home Guard, what were you doing?
Oh, we weren't bothered with Home Guard when we got to the beaches. Just on rare occasions, they would take an odd one of the sergeants away from the regiment up to one of these places and where they were training the Home Guard, an odd time. That wasn't as regular as we used to do before we went to the beaches.
So
from the beaches, we...
You were at Bridport only a short time, were you?
Yes.
And then you moved over to beaches.
We didn't stay in Bridport. We stayed...
Yes, this place...
Bridport was the main town.
Yes.
And Eatmouth is just off Bridport. Eatmouth is the village, name of the coastal resort.
But you were only there a short time.
A short time, yeah. I can't say how long.
And then
I haven't got it written down. Then
where did you move?
We moved from, we had an area from Eatmouth covering Lyme Regis, Eatmouth, West Bay, and up to Portland Bell. Around that's the area we used to cover. And then we moved from there in preparation to go to Egypt, up to Honiton.
Before we go there, can we talk about what you were doing on the beaches?
On the beaches. What we were doing on the beaches, we had laid access down from the cliffs down to the beaches, the access roads. Every day, every night, we laid anti-tank mines, anti-personnel mines across the road. And every morning, we lifted them up again. Because that was to show that the lads could go down and get into the water if they wanted to wash and swim, you know. But our training there was mainly just standing too on the beaches right around the cliff tops. And we had little trenches dug here and there right where on the cliff tops and observing the comes and goings on the water, you know.
Were the beaches wired and mined? You've mentioned the access
the access is at our time. There was no beaches mined at our time, the short time we were there. In fact, the wiring wasn't right down to the water side because there were still people using the little locals using the boats to go out to the water. They hadn't got acclimatized that there was a war on, you know. But all that stopped eventually. Then they started to put dunnet wire up and then more mines.
What were the conditions of the battalion as regards weapons and supplies and materials? I mean, you'd lost an enormous amount in France.
It didn't seem to get any better when we came back. We were re-equipped with rifles again, 2-inch mortars. I would imagine that the RQMS and the storekeeper would get his supplies made up with equipment which had been lost. But no new equipment. The only equipment we had was a 303 rifle. We had a 55 anti-tank rifle, and a 5.5, and a 2-inch mortar. That was for the local regiment, you know, the local unit. There was a proper mortar unit where they had bigger mortars, like 3-inch mortars and such like. But we had hand grenades and all we had ourselves.
This would take time, though, for this material to come through.
Oh, yes, yes. We didn't have a rifle at times. We just couldn't say, well, there's a rifle for you, you know.
Did you feel that if the Germans had come, you could have kept them out?
No, we hadn't a chance. Not us at that time. But, I mean, let's face it, it was more than us there. We were just a little group. And when you come to realise that we did have a chance because we were carrying out the work and really defending the place, our little activity was not really involved, shall I say. There was no landings. And the nearest landing we ever heard of was down not far from Charlbury there. Lyme Regis. There was two Germans picked up trying to land at Lyme Regis.
Was the German air activity at this time? Was the raids going over?
The raids were constant, yeah.
Did that affect you? Were you hit at all?
No. They weren't bombing us. They were passing us. We used to say when we were out on patrol, we used to patrol the cliffs. 24 hours they were patrolled, you know, and the beaches were watched. But when we were doing these patrols, there they are again, and the cloud roars of them as they went across to London and places, you know, bombing Germany. But we were lucky, and the nearer the coast you were, the safer you were, like, from the bombing. Yeah.
What were you living in on the coast itself?
Well, we were living in these small wood huts.
Were you still in the huts?
Still in the huts. We lived all the time in these little wood huts, not even a tent. But these huts were better than a tent. Because they were little wood, held 2 or 3 people, you know. There were holiday cabins for people who used to come on holiday. So we just took the whole lot over.
Were the civilians still about the area?
Oh, yes.
How did they receive you?
The civilians were excellent, very, very friendly, especially down in Deepmouth, Bridport, Westby, Weymouth. Very, very friendly people. They couldn't do enough for you. And they made you welcome when you went into the bar. There was a bar at Eatmouth, the one pub when you used to go in there, and then there was a big hotel. But the hotel was for the officers, and it's just like, you know, they used to frequent the hotel. But the likes of us, so mind, we didn't get any for nothing because we had to pay for our drinks. But they really made us welcome. And lots of the people used to come out of the houses with gifts of biscuits and chocolate and things like that, you know, when we returned from France, until things settled down again. And then that seemed to disperse, that just disappear again. Because they got used with seeing the truth back again. Well, we've given what we could, and that's, they just settled back to normality.